This episode is brought to you by BattleBards, premier tabletop audio for your campaigns. Use the coupon codes GMJ1, 2, or 3 to get free bonus tracks with your first order at battlebards.com.
Storm King's Thunder. Nah, Thunder. Nah.
Star Walker Studios presents Game Master's Thunder. Journey, your multi-dimensional RPG podcast. Thunder. Hello, listener. Greetings, fellow GM and or player. Welcome to episode 107 of Game Master's Journey, your multidimensional RPG podcast. I'm your host, Lex Starwalker, and I'm coming at you today with another on-the-fly episode. Still don't have the studio set up again. Still using my mobile rig. But hey, that's okay. I wanted to talk to you today about the new storyline for Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition, Storm King's Thunder. Here, let me see if I can do that better. Storm King's Thunder. I don't know if that was better or not, but at least I tried. So I really like what Wizards of the Coast is doing with these storylines. You know, we started out, our first storyline was Tyranny of Dragons, which has definitely gotten mixed reviews, but I overall enjoyed. I ran a little over the first half of it, and maybe someday we'll get back and finish it. I enjoyed the campaign, and I think that it's a good campaign. It does require a lot of work on the part of the GM to really make it work. There are definitely some editorial issues with Tyranny of Dragons, a lot of which had to do with the fact that the adventure was being developed at the same time that 5th edition was. So, you know, you got to cut him some slack. And if you'd like to know more about my thoughts on Tyranny of Dragons, I wrote a review of it on my blog, and I'll link to that in the show notes. Next, we had Princes of the Apocalypse, which was a reimagining of the or retelling of the Elemental Evil dungeon from way back in the day, the Temple of Elemental Evil. And then after that, we had Out of the Abyss, which took us into the Underdark. And then our most recent storyline is Curse of Strahd, which I am running right now. Now, I ran, like I said, the first half of Tyranny of Dragons. I played a little bit of the beginning of Princes of the Apocalypse. Did not run or play Out of the Abyss, but I did watch the actual play of it that Wizards did on their YouTube channel for Dungeons & Dragons. And Greg Tito did a great job running that game. And as I said, I'm running Curse of Strahd now. So from my exposure to those various adventures, Curse of Strahd is definitely my personal favorite, and that's coming from someone who isn't a huge horror buff. I'm not really into horror that much, which might surprise you, but despite that, I think that Curse of Strahd is, hands down, no contest, in my opinion, the best adventure that Wizards has put out for 5th edition, or another way to say it is the best official 5th edition adventure, and that's including Lost Mines of Phandelver. Yesterday, Wizards finally officially announced the new storyline, which is called Storm King's Thunder. And as I think a lot of us suspected or, quote, knew before then, it's about giants. So this has been teased numerous times by numerous people from Wizards that one of the coming storylines would be about giants, and I think a lot of us were guessing that it would be this next one. So you can catch that live stream on Wizards D&D YouTube channel. Honestly, a lot wasn't said, just kind of a teaser of the backdrop of this story. And one thing that I really like about what was revealed is that this adventure, this campaign, well, it's happening in the Forgotten Realms, of course. That's not what I really like about it. What I really like about it is that it is taking into account Tyranny of Dragons. So kind of what sets this campaign in motion is partly what happened in the Tyranny of Dragons campaign. So spoiler alert for Tyranny of Dragons. If you don't already know, Tyranny of Dragons is basically about forces in Faerun trying to release Tiamat, the evil chromatic dragon goddess, from her prison into the world. And so the whole kind of shtick of that campaign is the PCs are trying to stop that, trying to thwart that plot to release Tiamat. And as Chris Perkins described it in the live stream, the Giants didn't really do much during all that. They didn't really get involved. And in ancient history of the Forgotten Realms, the Giants and the Dragons were bitter enemies. And so the gods of the Giants are not happy that they didn't do anything when these evil dragons were trying to let Tiamat out on the world. The Giants didn't do anything, didn't lift a finger when their ancient enemy was, you know, doing all this stuff. So the gods are pissed. And the way that the giant gods, I think there is a particular god, but I don't remember the name of that god, decides to handle this is to break the ordaining. And the ordaining, if you want to know a little bit more about that, you can just go check out the entry on giants in the monster manual. It talks about the ordaining. But the ordaining is basically this hierarchy that exists within the giants, within their societies, that ranks giants from, you know, lesser to greater. So at the bottom, you've got hill giants, and at the top, you've got storm giants. And it's representing their place in giant society, but it also directly parallels how powerful those giants are, or their CR, if you'd like to use a game term. So basically what's happened is the giant gods have broken the ordaining and they've said, you know, you're no longer limited to this. Any giant can raise as far as he can or fall as far as he can based on their actions, and basically tell the giants, impress us. It seems like the idea here is it's a sudden free-for-all for the giants, and instead of, you know, your lowly hill giant just doomed to be at the bottom of the totem pole forever, no matter what he does, now there's a potential for that hill giant to go out and do something amazing and impress the giant gods and maybe get a higher station. Now, I have a lot of questions about this. Not a lot of information was given, really not much more was given than what I've told you, especially not specifics of how this is going to work. But what I'm curious about is the ordaining isn't just a social construction. It's a physical reality. I mean, hill giants are less powerful than stone giants, which are less powerful than fire giants, which are less powerful than storm giants. So it seems like even if the gods are like, hey, we don't care about that anymore, anyone can do anything, it still seems like things are kind of going to shake out the way they already are, because how is a hill giant going to outperform a storm giant? I mean, they're not nearly as powerful. They're not nearly as smart. I don't know. Now, maybe, you know, you might look at some of the other giants that are a little closer in power, like maybe a storm giant versus a cloud giant. And you might say, well, you know, a really old and wise and powerful cloud giant could probably take on a younger, weaker storm giant. So I don't know if there's going to be any kind of mechanical reflection of this. I would think that there kind of has to be, you know, when this is all said and done in the new ordaining or the new ordering of giants is established. Let's say that the hill giants are just really amazing and the stone giants just kind of phone it in, and the hill giants end up ranked above the stone giants. Does that mean that the hill giants will become more powerful, and from now on hill giants won't be the weakest giant? It will be the stone giants? I don't know. And I'm also kind of, when asking these questions, I'm making the assumption that this is going to be kind of a species-wide thing or a race-wide thing, right? So either all the hill giants will be lifted up or they won't. But it's possible this will be even more complicated and it will be completely on an individual basis. And it's just giant by giant. And so you might have a particular hill giant ranked above a particular fire giant, but then above both of them is another particular stone giant, which is kind of cool and maybe a bit more, I don't know, believable. But man, what a pain in the ass logistically to handle that. So I'm really curious how this is going to shake out as far as gameplay and mechanics of Dungeons and Dragons. You know, is this going to lead to changes in giants in the monster manual for Forgotten Realms or for your campaign if you run Storm King's Thunder? I don't know. So I have to say, I'm pretty excited about this storyline. First of all, giants are cool. And giants are something I've always used giants a lot in my games, especially in my early days of D&D. Like a hill giant was, I loved hill giants. They were a great monster to throw at, you know, relatively low level, like second or third level characters. A hill giant was a great thing to throw at them to kind of put the fear of God, or I should say the fear of the dungeon master into them, right? I just love giants. And then on up from there, they just get more cool. I mean, honestly, hill giants are the least cool of the giants, although they most closely fit the kind of brutish, unintelligent stereotype that's kind of out there for giants. But the other thing is, at least in recent years, you know, there hasn't been much done with giants, at least to my knowledge, with adventures or whatnot. So I think that, you know, it's definitely a class of monster in D&D that deserves some more love and deserves a story told around it. And I think that's really cool. And the other thing that's really exciting for me personally about this is Chris Perkins made reference to the ancient enmity between the dragons and the giants. And this is something that I'm already planning to do something with in my homebrew world of Primordia. So, you know, something I've found myself wondering as I've been doing world building lately is Wizards is really focused on doing these storylines and putting out these published campaigns. And I think it's pretty safe to assume that they're going to continue that path. And, you know, if you look at what's been released for Dungeons and Dragons since the Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master's Guide, and Monster Manual, not counting those, everything since then, the majority of the books and products that we've gotten have been adventures. I mean, we have the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, and is that it? I feel like that's it for non-adventure supplements to the game. I think so, as far as, you know, a published book supplement. I mean, there was the Player's Companion for Elemental Evil that you can download for free, which is awesome. You know, the various Unearthed Arcana and whatnot. But as far as published stuff, I'm thinking Sword Coast Adventures Guide is the only thing I can think of. And even that is, you know, completely rooted and mired in Forgotten Realms, which many of us aren't really a fan of. So how useful is it even? So anyway, my point is it seems like, at least for the foreseeable future, that we're, you know, most of the stuff we're going to be getting for 5th edition is going to be these adventures. So for someone like me who's building my own world, it makes me wonder, am I just not going to be interested in any 5th edition products in the foreseeable future because they're all going to be adventures, they're all going to be set in the Forgotten Realms or somehow shoehorned into it like Curse of Strahd was. And since I'm not running in Forgotten Realms, I'm running in Primordia, am I just not going to have any interest in any of this? And it's something I've been wondering, just, you know, how's this going to play out? Well, this particular adventure, at least, you know, I'm interested in, even as someone running in my homebrew world, because, you know, I probably wouldn't run the adventure as is because it's set in Forgotten Realms and it's assuming historical things and whatnot that are true in the realms that may or may not be true in Primordia. But at the very least, I would like to get my hands on it just to look at some of the other things, which I'll go into here in a minute, and just what they do with the giants and how they present giant NPCs and their personalities and what they're about. Also, Chris Perkins talked about, you know, we're going to have locations in this adventure on a giant scale. So he mentioned a fire giant's forge. So those will be cool locations to check out, you know, adventure locations that are made to the scale of a giant instead of a humanoid. It'll be really cool to see what they do with that. So as a world builder and someone who runs in my own setting, you know, I'm really excited about this adventure. And I know Wizards has done a pretty good job in the past of giving at least some thoughts on how to use their adventures in other settings. I know they did in Princes of the Apocalypse, gave some good advice on here's how to use this in Dragonlance, or here's how to use this in your own campaign setting. So hopefully they'll do the same with this one. So that wasn't all that Chris told us about this new story path. Turns out that your player characters are going to get some help in facing the giants, and that help comes in the form of using their own magic against them, namely rune magic. Now, those of you that pay attention to the Unearthed Arcana may remember that Wizards released an early version of a kind of rune magic in the Unearthed Arcana in the form of the Rune Scribe, which I believe was a prestige class. So I took a look at that way back when and wasn't super impressed with the Rune Scribe itself, but as far as the runes and how they worked, thought they were pretty cool. And we don't really know how much, if any, of that has carried over to what's in Storm King's Thunder. Could be exactly the same, could be totally different. We have no idea. I mean, that was kind of an early test of it, I'm sure. But Chris, actually, I shouldn't keep saying Chris, because Mike Merles was on there too. And I may not be remembering who said what, but they said that the runes themselves are carved on physical objects. And the power level of those runes is somewhat tied to, you know, what the object is that it's carved onto or inscribed on. And they said that, you know, these will give you some interesting opportunities because they are more versatile and can do more than a lot of the standard magic items in the Dungeon Master's Guide. So we know, as people who play 5th edition, that one of the kind of core balancing elements of the game is the fact that you can only have 3 attuned items. And, you know, the rune stones that were in the Unearthed Arcana, you had to attune to. However, the Rune Scribe got the ability eventually to have a 4th attuned item. But, you know, having this limitation of only being able to have 3 items attuned at a time, and, you know, your most powerful and interesting and useful items are going to tend to require attunement, you know, being able to have items that are much more versatile and can do more things are going to be extremely useful if you, you know, need to take up one of your precious few attunement slots with that item. So I'm really excited to see the rune magic and how that plays out and how they do that. And again, you know, as a world builder and thinking about running my own campaigns in Primordia, having a new flavor of magic or a new type of magic item is all good in my book, because Primordia is all about magic. And the more kinds and types of magic and magic items I can have, the better. So there is a little bit about Storm King's Thunder on the Dungeons & Dragons website. And here's what they say. Hill giants are stealing all the grain and livestock they can, while stone giants have been scouring settlements that have been around forever. Fire giants are press ganging the small folk into the desert, while frost giant longships have been pillaging along the Sword Coast. Even the elusive cloud giants have been witnessed, their wondrous floating cities appearing above Waterdeep and Baldur's Gate. Where is the storm giant King Hecaton, who is tasked with keeping order among the giants? We don't know where he is. The humans, dwarves, elves, and other small folk of the Sword Coast will be crushed underfoot from the onslaught of these giant foes. The only chance at survival is for the small folk to work together to investigate this invasion and harness the power of rune magic, the giant's weapon, against their ancient enemy, the dragons. The only way the people of Faerun can restore order is to use the giant's own power against them. And something else that was mentioned in the live stream is what some of these giants are doing, specifically the cloud giants, who are the most magical of the giants, is they are looking for sites of ancient dragon magic, and they are trying to find ancient dragon magic that they can use against their ancient enemies, the dragons. So maybe we'll learn a bit more about some of this ancient dragon magic as well, which would be super cool too. So a little bit about the rune magic. Ancient and powerful rune magic is an ancient practice that allows giants and anyone else who masters the runes of power to grant magical properties to an object by scribing a rune onto it. People who use runes are called runecasters. So this is right from the Unearthed Arcana, which makes me think that we're going to see a finalized version of the Runecaster's prestige class in Storm King's Thunder. Runes are their strongest when scribed onto objects that are difficult or dangerous to acquire. Exotic, rare, and expensive objects can channel greater magic from a rune, but to truly empower a runecaster must seek the bones of powerful monsters, rare and valuable treasures, and materials found only in deadly dungeons or the outer planes to produce the rune's most powerful effects. So fetch quests will abound, my friends. But there is a danger in working with runes. The giants have cataloged some of the interactions between runes and various objects, but many more remain undiscovered, and unexpected results have been known to produce catastrophic effects. So that's really cool too. You know, not only do you have all these different runes, and of course you as a dungeon master can always come up with more runes of your own that especially fit your setting, but there's also the interactions of the rune itself with whatever material it's inscribed upon. And again, I'm sure we're going to be given some examples, but it's surely not going to be an exhaustive list. So you as a dungeon master will be able to take that list and expand it into other materials and think about, well, what happens if this rune is inscribed on mithril? What happens if this rune is inscribed on adamantine? What happens if that rune is inscribed on a diamond? What happens if this rune is inscribed on a bone from an ancient red dragon? Et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, that's really cool. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this works mechanically, the interaction between the magic of the rune itself and the effects brought on by the material that's inscribed on. Because that seems like a great system where you can just come up with so many combinations. You know, you come up with some more runes, you come up with some more materials, and boom, you've got dozens, if not hundreds, of new possibilities of different combinations, which is really cool. And, you know, it could be, you know, I'm guessing that the material that they're inscribed on isn't just going to affect the power of the rune, but will actually affect the things that it can do, right? So each rune is associated with a concept or an idea, right? So you might have a rune of fire or a rune of wind or something like that, right? So you take your rune of fire and you put it on a ruby and maybe it does X, Y, and Z, but you put it on something else and maybe it does something totally different, or maybe it does something additional. So this could be another great way for player characters to kind of customize their magic items a bit, because you might be able to somewhat control what this item can do based on, you know, what kind of material you put this rune on and what rune you use. And I think that's really cool. You know, I'm not a huge fan of like what we had in third edition, where you have all these item slots and you're trying to get the best item for each slot, you know, this very kind of MMO-like approach. I'm not really a fan of that, but I do like you know, saying, hey, you just have a limit to how many items you can have. So you definitely want to think about those items because you only have so many. And I do like, you know, finding items that do the most for you, you know. And me personally, I tend to value items that allow me to do cool things that I wouldn't be able to do otherwise, as opposed to items that just give me some kind of bonus to something. I mean, yeah, +2 sword is great, but ultimately it's kind of boring. I'd much rather have a flaming sword, you know, because now I can emit light, which I couldn't do before. I can create fire, which I couldn't do before. And it's just cooler. So another thing that was mentioned in the live stream is another product that's going to be coming out. And I don't remember what the exact title was. It's a new Volo's Guide. And I think it's Volo's Guide to Monsters of the Forgotten Realms or Monsters of Faerun or something like that. And I'm a little unclear as to exactly what this product is going to be. Based on what I remember seeing on the stream, it is going to be a write-up on lore about monsters in the Forgotten Realms. So I imagine there'll be a good section on giants in there where we're taking monsters that we already have information on in the monster manual, but we're expanding the lore on those monsters, you know, what their culture's like and things like that, which sounds awesome. Like, I'm super excited for that. It's a shame that it's Forgotten Realms. I much rather would have had it be generic or even just Greyhawk, or honestly anything other than Forgotten Realms, but whatever. Hopefully, you know, it will be useful still to those of us that aren't running in the realms that we can convert some of that stuff over. And I believe I remember them saying that there are also going to be something like 100 new monsters in there. And that's what really makes me question the Forgotten Realms angle. I mean, it's one thing to put out a book and say, here's a book with lore on monsters from the Monster Manual with more lore. And that lore is based on the Forgotten Realms. So this is what red dragons are like in the Forgotten Realms. This is what fire giants are like in the Forgotten Realms. Like, that's cool. But to add 100 new monsters to the game, but have that be in a Forgotten Realms product, it's like, first of all, are there really 100 monsters that are unique to the realms that aren't found in Greyhawk or Mystara or anywhere else? And if there are, there are probably a lot of really weird or lame monsters in there. I'm just saying. But it seems like that those 100 monsters should be more of just a D&D thing and not a Forgotten Realms thing. So I don't know. Maybe I misunderstood what this product is. It kind of like the Sora Coast Adventures Guide. It seems like it's trying to be two different things at once. And it's trying to satisfy two different types of player or DM at once. And we'll see how successful it is or isn't at that. But I'm always excited to have new monsters in the game. And I'm definitely excited to see what they come up with as far as more lore and what monsters they decide to develop more lore for. You know, for me personally, my desire to have this book or how much I'm going to like this book is going to very much depend on the monsters they pick to detail. Right. I think that's true for any of us. I think that any of us, you could go through the monster manual and pick 100 monsters to talk more about. And we'd be like, yeah, I don't care. I really don't care about that. Or you could take the same monster manual and pick 100 different monsters. And we'd be like, oh my God, I can't wait to get this book. Right. Like, there are just some monsters I just don't care about. And if you're going to give me 10 pages of lore on it, I'm just going to skip it. You know, like Huatua, like, who gives a shit? All those aquatic things like the Sahuagin, and like, I don't care. I don't want to do an underwater adventure. And so, you know, those aquatic things are a very limited use to me. I mean, I love Abalus. I think Abalus are about the coolest thing out there, but I have not used them very many times because, you know, it's like, well, you need this aquatic environment to use an Abalus, and, you know, I have to engineer that because I'm not going to do like an underwater campaign. So I have to get to PC somewhere where they could encounter an Abalith. And yeah, It just doesn't happen very often. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what that book ends up really being, and are there going to be 100 new monsters in it? I don't know. And if so, those monsters, are they going to be a lot of old favorites that really aren't native or specific to the Forgotten Realms, and they're just being put in this book? Or are they going to be a bunch of new weird things that we've never seen? Are they just going to be slightly different reskinnings of monsters for the Forgotten Realms? Like, here's a Faerunian red dragon that's almost exactly like the red dragon in the Monster Manual with these few tiny changes. I don't know. Have to wait and see. So that's basically the highlights of what was revealed. I'm sure there's going to be more information revealed. The book is coming out sometime in September. I don't remember the date. Again, I just watched this live stream for shits and giggles. I was not planning on doing an episode about it, so I didn't take notes or anything. But I thought it would be fun to talk about, because this is kind of exciting. And it's cool for an old grognard like me to have this kind of community around D&D now, where, you know, we had a release of, you know, it's not even a release, announcement of a coming release for D&D, and we got to have a live stream of it, and people were excited about it. And I tell you what, you know, you hear a lot of criticism of Wizards of the Coast. You hear a lot of criticism of D&D, as you will. People are going to criticize everything under the sun. But something to me that really matters to me is watching this live stream. And when Mike Merles comes up on stage to talk about Storm King's Thunder, what matters to me is how excited this man is to talk about D&D, to talk about Storm King's Thunder. I mean, he was practically jumping up and down with glee. I mean, the man was visibly ecstatic to be there talking about D&D. And, you know, that's awesome. You know, that's really important, because there's nothing worse than to hear a developer talk about, you know, their thing they're working on, and they're just like, yeah, so we did this thing, and I think you'll like it. It'll be pretty cool. You know what I mean? I mean, D&D is being made by people who love D&D, and D&D has a history and a culture all its own. And the people at Wizards know that, they understand that, they respect that, and they honor it, which is awesome. So it makes me feel good. It makes me feel like the IP is in good hands, and it makes me excited for what they come up with in the future. And I know that not everybody's a fan of, you know, this story focused course that they're taking with fifth edition. You know, some people want their monthly splat books, you know. Some people want that, or at least more often, you know, people want more player options or more this or more that, or they want published settings or whatever, you know, and everybody's going to have their own opinion on that. Me personally, I like the direction that they're going. I remember the third edition days when, you know, there was a book a month and you couldn't keep up, and you had, you know, power creep and systems creep and all this, and it just became unmanageable. Pathfinder's even worse. I didn't play fourth edition, but from what I've heard, it was very similar. So I do personally feel like maybe they stepped a little bit too far in the other direction to get away from that. And, you know, I personally would like to see a bit more coming out from Wizards of the Coast as far as official published products, and would like to see a bigger team working on D&D so that they can do more and, you know, put out more content for us. But it's definitely better than how it was in the past. So if it's an either or thing, I definitely take it the way it is now. You know, hopefully as time goes, that, you know, hopefully they can ramp things up a little bit. And, you know, the nice thing and what I really like is that they've made fifth edition so easy to work with that it's like, yeah, you're not getting a splat book every month. You don't have your complete book of elves. You don't have your book of the ranger and all that crap. But honestly, how hard is it for you to come up with that? How hard is it in fifth edition to create a domain or to create a background or to create a new spell or a magic item? It's really easy. Now, if you're getting into creating new races or sub-races or creating a new class or a new class archetype, now that gets a little bit more challenging, but it's still doable. And I would argue it's still easier to do than it was, at least in third edition. I don't know about previous editions. I wasn't really, you know, trying to invent classes or anything back in those days, but I would try it in fifth edition. I would totally, and in fact, I already have, I would totally make my own races or classes or whatever. I feel like it, you know, it's not a hard system to unpack and understand. I wouldn't try it with third edition or Pathfinder. It would just be a mess, which is not to say that I couldn't do it. I just wouldn't want to. So it's like, yeah, we're not getting all the player options that some people might want, and we're not getting all the campaign settings that some people might want. But honestly, how hard is it to do that yourself? You know, if you want to run Dragonlance, how hard is it really to run Dragonlance in fifth edition and take your adventures and your monsters and everything else from previous editions and just convert them? It's not hard to do at all. So, you know, I like that. You know, I would much rather you give me a game that I can understand, that I can take apart and put back together, and then I can use that to build everything I need to order, than, you know, put out a game that I can't do that with, and instead you're giving me supplements every month, and I just have to keep up with all those supplements or pick the ones that I want or whatever. And it's like you're just doing it all for me and just spoon feeding me everything. You know, I don't know. It could be a generational thing. It could be because I'm older. You know, when I learned D&D and when I grew up and started playing D&D, you know, it was all about doing your own thing. It was, you know, everybody ran in their own setting of their own creation. You know, I was actually the odd one in that I was running in Forgotten Realms. I was running in a published setting. Like all my other friends had their own worlds that they ran in. So, you know, I tried to make Forgotten Realms my own and tried to do my own things with it, but I was the only one taking a published setting and using that. You know, we never played modules. We never played published adventures. It was always things that the Dungeon Master came up with himself. You know, so this idea of needing the publisher to spoon feed you everything, it's just foreign to me. And it's kind of like, but that's not what D&D is. D&D has always from the very beginning in 1974 has been about, here, we give you the tip of the iceberg. Now you create the rest yourself. That's what D&D has always been. So, you know, it could just be a generational thing. It could be that my perspective is different than a lot of people these days. But, you know, I just hear people complaining about the, quote, lack of material for fifth edition. And it's like, well, what are you doing? You should be coming up with your own stuff anyway. And if you take what Wizards have given you and then you add in even, you know, 10 or 20% of that of your own creation, it should be plenty for any gaming table to keep them busy for quite a while, I would think. So I'm really excited about this new storyline. I don't know if I'll run it personally. I know if I do, it will not be in Forgotten Realms. God's no. I honestly hope to never, ever run another game in Forgotten Realms. But I am excited because it could be fun to take the storyline and put it in Primordia and change it around, you know, because Curse of Strahd, I'm really happy with, and I am going to do a full review of Curse of Strahd soon once I've had a little more experience with it. But, you know, the other adventures from Wizards that I've seen, or for D&D 5e that I've seen, you know, there's a lot that I could cut out. Like if I were going to do Tyranny of Dragons again, I would probably cut out about 50% of that campaign and either replace it with something else or just skip it. There's a lot of filler in there. You know, Princes of the Apocalypse, I never actually read. I played it and you know, I only played it for, I don't know, a couple months. So I don't really know how much of that campaign I experienced compared to the total. But from what I experienced, it seemed like there was a lot of filler. In fact, it seemed like almost everything that I experienced was filler and just kind of like, oh, let's just do this dungeon for no apparent reason. You know, maybe it tied in somehow, I hope, later on. But my point is a lot of times these published adventures, you know, they take a really good idea and a really cool concept and they expand it a bit too much. It's kind of like you have this really great idea for a short story and you write a novel out of it. you know, and it's like, yeah, it really should have been a short story, but you added a bunch of BS and made it into a novel. And I feel like a lot of times with published adventures, that's what you get. And Curse of Strahd doesn't so much seem that way. I mean, there are definitely parts of it that are less exciting than others, but Curse of Strahd is also very much like a sandbox. In that kind of thing, like, I kind of appreciate that it's like, well, you got to give your players a lot of things to do, and all those things can't be equally interesting or dangerous or whatever. And, you know, hopefully your players will just avoid some of the boring stuff. So my point is even if I took, you know, this giant campaign and said, hey, I'm going to do something with this in Primordia, I probably would not worry too much about sticking to the actual adventure as written. I would probably more take the NPCs and the locations and the ideas behind the adventure and then do my own thing with it that fits Primordia. I don't know. We might have to go back in time to do that, though. I don't know. We'll have to see. So anyway, there's some thoughts on Storm King's Thunder. And hopefully I'll edit it out, but every time there's this pause before I say Storm King's Thunder, because I can never remember what it's called. For whatever reason, that name just does not stick in my head at all. So hopefully it's more memorable for other people than it is for me, because I can't remember that title to save my life. Storm King's Thunder. Maybe if I say it 100 times. So I'm excited about it, despite the unevocative title for me. I'm really excited to see what's all in there. And honestly, I'm most excited about the non-adventure stuff. I'm excited to see the NPCs, any new giants that they reveal, the mechanics of the room magic and how that works. And oh, I almost forgot. Another thing they mentioned is there's a possibility of your character becoming a giant. Now, personally, I'm hoping that's a temporary thing, because I can't honestly think of a character I've played that I would want to actually be a giant forever. Like, oh, my character's going to be a giant now. It's like, no, I don't want that. I mean, honestly, I don't see a whole lot of benefit to being a giant. Like, if I was an elf or a human or a dwarf or whatever, I wouldn't want to be like, I'd rather be a giant. Especially trying to adventure. I mean, you're not going to be able to go anywhere. You'll never fit into any building anywhere, ever. Now they presented it as, you know, a way to kind of meet the giants eye to eye so that they respect you and listen to you. So maybe it's kind of a temporary thing where you take on giant form to deal with the giants and then you're back to yourself. I don't know. Personally, I wouldn't see being turned into a giant as a good thing. It wouldn't be something I would look forward to. But I don't know, maybe in a campaign that's all about giants, it could work. But then it's like, what do you do with that character afterwards now that you're a giant? I don't know. Now, if I were to turn into a dragon, that would be cool. But a giant, it's like, I'm just big. Who cares about that? But yeah, so that'll be interesting to see how that works. And you know, of course, that had me wondering about, you know, like in third edition, we had ECL, right? Effective character level, where you could play these more powerful races, but it was, quote, balanced, supposedly, because you had to earn more XP to go up levels because you were effectively higher than first level when you were at first level. I don't know how balanced that really was. Obviously, we're not going to have ECLs in 5th edition, so I wonder how that's going to work mechanically if you take a human barbarian and now he's a fire giant barbarian. You know, it seems like that would have a pretty huge impact on the kind of CRs that character could handle. So I'm curious what their guidelines are going to be for dungeon masters for making encounters or balancing encounters for these giant player characters. It's like, do you just pretend they're a couple levels higher than they are, or how's that going to work? So that'll be interesting to see, especially because whatever they come up with for that, however they answer that question, you can take that answer and apply it across the board, right? So if you want to run a campaign where the player characters are dragons, now you'll have some idea of how to go about, you know, setting up encounters and whatnot based on whatever they come up with for when your characters are giants. So I'm excited to see that too. All right, so I'm going to wrap this up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in, and definitely let me know what you think about Storm King's Thunder and what you think of Volo's Guide to Monsters of Faerun, or whatever the hell it's called. You can shoot me an email at gamemastersjourney@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Lex Starwalker. Follow me on Google plus Lex Starwalker. Visit my website, starwalkerstudios.com. You can find the show notes there. And in there, I'll have a link to my review of Tyranny of Dragons. And again, I will, in the near future, be doing a review on this show of Curse of Strahd. And I'll likely be doing a review on my blog at starwalkerstudios.com as well for Curse of Strahd. I want to send a thank you and a shout out to my Tier 6 patron, Mr. Steve Strickland. Let's hear it for Steve. Yeah. Yeah, give it up for Steve.
Yeah. Steve, you're the man.
So thank you so much, Steve, and thank you to all of my patrons. I really appreciate it. You can find out about becoming a patron yourself at the bottom of the show notes at starwalkerstudios.com. You can also find other ways that you can support the show, including checking out BattleBards. So you can go to battlebards.com and get awesome sounds for your RPG. Everything from music to sound effects to ambient sounds, like you're in a tavern or you're in a cave, to monster sounds, all kinds of stuff. And I've got some coupon codes for you that you can use on your first purchase at battlebards.com to get some free bonus tracks. You can use the code GMJ1, GMJ2, or GMJ3 on your first purchase, and you get some bonus tracks. And those codes are for different packages, different prices. So you can, again, at the bottom of the show notes, starwalkerstudios.com/GameMastersJourney. I've got it spelled out what codes for what, if you're interested in that. So definitely check that out. And I really appreciate all the ways that people support the show. So as I said, I am still sans studio here. So using a mobile setup, so I'm a little limited in what I can do as far as the editing and the production and whatnot. So I apologize if these past few episodes have been kind of rough. Do have computer number one is in process of being rebuilt and will hopefully be done within the next couple of days. Computer number two is in the mail. Who knows when it's going to get here? So once that happens, I can finally start to get the studio completely set up. So hopefully we'll only be another week or two before I'm back to full capacity. But I wanted to do this kind of a bonus episode today and talk about this, talk about where D&D is going next, because I thought it would be fun to talk about. And I feel like I owe you guys a couple episodes because I missed a couple weeks during the move. So I hope you have a chance to play your favorite RPG this week. I'll be back soon with another episode of Game Master's Journey. Until then, game on.
This has been a Starwalker Studios production, your source for quality gaming and hobby podcasts.
This episode's music provided by Cloudwalker, Renfield, Stanko, Transboy, and Ish. Please see the show notes for more details at starwalkerstudios.com/GameMastersJourney.